Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Hey everybody, welcome to another Thursday night. This is your host, Rick Hale, on Paranormal Underground Radio. Sorry to say, Karen will not be joining us tonight. I believe she is seeing her son do a concert. There's, you know, nothing better than watching a bunch of prepubescent kids, you know, sound like Peter Brady as they sing. So, but tonight joining us, we have some pretty interesting guests tonight. We have Brandon Alvis and Michael Rudy of the American Paranormal Research Association. And they're going to be talking to us about their investigations and their web-based television show on Coldcast Television called Haunted Discoveries. And, you know, we're just going to go right into it after our, you know, typical destination truth-type moment. I am your host, Rick Gates. Hey, guys, welcome to Paranormal Underground.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having us on.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. You know, it takes me a couple minutes to get my mojo back after all that, but I think I'm going to be all right. So, Brandon Alvis and Michael Rudy, you guys, which one of you is the exact founder of the American Paranormal Research Association?
Myself, Brandon. I founded the organization in 2006 to solely investigate historical locations across the United States.
Okay, cool. How about you, Mike? How did you get involved with Brandon?
He and I have actually been friends since high school. We met our freshman year of high school, and during high school and out of high school, we just kind of we did our own investigating, just, you know, as casual investigators interested in the paranormal. And then when I got the opportunity a couple years ago, I started investigating as a full fledged member of APRA. Actually, my first investigation was on Halloween night. Which is always a cool anniversary for something in this area. So
yeah, definitely.
It's always interesting to enjoy the stuff that you love to do through your whole life. You know, so we've been friends for a long time.
That's great. Now, with from what I understand is that you guys actually have a web-based television show on Coldcast called Haunted Discoveries. Now, you mentioned that you guys do a lot of investigations of historic sites. You know, how long has your program been going on now?
It actually just aired in January of 2011, and we actually are currently in our second season. Actually, the second season will air this Monday, beginning with Silver City Ghost Town. But it's only been a few months that the series has been going. I'm sure a lot of you out there are familiar with web series, and they're a little shorter than normal television, not only the span of a season, but obviously the episodes as well. And so we usually do 5 episodes a season, and actually this season we'll be doing episodes that are around 15 to 24 minutes long.
Okay. Let's talk about, let's talk about the show. You know, you guys do a lot of historic sites. You know, can you, you know, elaborate on some of the places that you have investigated? You know, for the first, you know, we'll start off with the first season. You know, tell us a little bit about it, the kind of activity and the kind of spirits that are involved.
Definitely. The first season, we went back and investigated some locations we've worked with for a few years. One thing with our organization we like to do is host fundraisers for historical locations.
Oh, that's great.
All proceeds do benefit the historical restoration of the structure. And so we went back and did, for the first episode, was the McConaughey Estate in Hayward, California, which is a phenomenal historical location. We were the first team to actually investigate the location, and we did document some pretty odd data. And the really interesting thing about that building and the history of that building is that the entire line of the McConaughey family lived and died in that house. And we're talking almost, I think, around 6 deaths in the house from the McConaughey family, one being John McConaughey, who lived there from 16 years old all the way till he was 100, almost 101, and passed away in the house. And actually, the first death that took place in the building was with Archibald McConaughey, who was the eldest son, and he died in a freak farm accident where he was getting ready to cross over railroad tracks with his horse and a piece of farm equipment when his horse spooked, bucked him off, and it ran him over, and he died a few days later in the house.
I would say that this is definitely a family that does not have very good luck with living. But, you know, how are they as in, you know, I guess as dead, if you believe that, you know, ghosts are in fact the spirits of dead. You know, what kind of, what did you guys specifically experience in this home?
Actually, in the home, you know, it's one of those places that definitely doesn't have a welcoming feeling. You walk into the house, and what I can relate it to almost is, you know how you walk into a room where someone just had an argument? You feel that tension, that energy in the air. It almost feels like that every time you walk into the McConaughey estate. And, I mean, we've had the sensations of being rushed, people being almost pushed out of rooms, if you will. Almost every time we've done a public event or had a public fundraiser, younger girls around the age of 15 and younger all have an experience where they feel sick, are about to pass out, and say that they see visions of a man, an older, angry man. And that's been kind of a common trend with our events, wouldn't you say so, Michael?
Definitely. Yeah, there's always something that happens at that location, specifically the McConaughey. You know, it's kind of a negative environment at times, for sure. You know, it tends to pick up when you have multiple people there, big groups, and you know, and that tends to be, you know, thus far in my experience in Abra, that's the majority of the time that I'm up in at the McConaughey or the Meek Estate is for events that we do. So that has generally been my experience with the location.
Yeah, and there's one instance when actually we filmed for the episode where I was up in the attic, which was formerly used as a ballroom, you know, a dancing area, kind of a gathering area for friends of the family. And I was up there and I felt the sensation of someone rushing me when we collected an EVP saying, just let them know, Dad.
Yeah. Now, you know, you talked about, I'm always interested about haunted locations where the spirits seem to target one certain kind of person. Is there anything, you know, historically why this spirit would target young girls? Like, for example, we have a place here, I'm in Chicago, and we have a bar up here called the Red Lion. And at the Red Lion, this place specifically targets young red-haired women for whatever reason. But do you guys have any, you know, historical, you know, documentation why this might be?
You know, it's funny you mention that because, you know, we heard from the Historical Society, or it has been mentioned to us on multiple occasions, that John McConaughey, who was the last of the McConaughey family to pass in the home, was basically liked the women. But the really...
Sounds like
really
you like young women.
Yeah, exactly. The really interesting piece of information we did receive was when we were up in Virginia City, Nevada, giving a lecture at the St. Mary's Paracon, when I did show a few EVPs from the McConaughey estate to the public. After that presentation, one of the women from the audience did approach me and tell me that she grew up in Hayward and grew up next to the McConaughey estate from when she was young. I think around the age of 8 years old until she was 18 and moved out. And that she used to walk by the McConaughey estate every day to the park, which is located just next door. And what she told me was that was the voice of John McConaughey, and that there were times she would go to the park and John McConaughey would come out in a bathrobe and seem to flash these younger girls.
That's quite possibly, you know, I've been in this field for almost 30 years, and that's quite possibly one of the weirdest things I've ever heard in my life.
definitely. Now, I mean, historically accurate, we're not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it could very well be possible. I mean, we got pedophiles today. I'm sure we had pedophiles 100 years ago as well. But, before we go into any other stories, I always like to ask this of other paranormal researchers and investigators. What exactly was it that brought you into this field that made you had an interest? Michael, let's start with you.
You know, originally, I would say, like, as far as the APRA website's concerned, you know, in my little bio there, my first paranormal experience was when I was about 5 years old. And the only reason I can kind of differentiate it from being a dream and really kind of know to myself that it actually happened since I was so young was just because, you know, I have very vague, if no memories from my childhood, just because, you know, my memory's not all that great. So this is just as vivid as if it happened to me earlier today or, you know, just a few seconds ago. And, right. You know, I remember waking up and I looked out my bedroom door, and my bedroom door directly faced the stairs, and I saw a man, standing on the stairs, or actually it would have been floating above the stairs because of where the landing was on the second floor, the positioning to where he was in relation to the stairs, he would have either had to be about, you know, 10, 12 feet tall, which would have been equally as scary, or or he would have been floating about, you know, 4 or 5 feet above the stairs. And, you know, there was no... I never ever had a break into the house, you know, or anything like that. And I know it wasn't that. I went screaming for my father. He came running in, and obviously he doesn't remember that situation because how many times do your kids have nightmares? So, you know, he didn't make any note of it. But because I asked him later, I said, "Do you remember this?" And he's like, "Not really." But, you know, it stuck with me my whole life. And then, you know, it was just a common interest between Brandon and I. Mm-hmm. And it was something that we shared and we were involved in. And like I said, that's what brought me to being active in the field as far as APRA is concerned.
Right. What about you, Brandon? What exactly was it that brought you into this field? I know that you had something really dramatic happened that brought you into the field. Do you feel comfortable talking about it?
Definitely. You know, okay, it's cool. Part of my path, my journey, if you will, into this field. But in 1995... Right. I lost my oldest brother to cancer, and in 2004, I lost another brother to suicide.
I'm really sorry to hear that, dude.
Oh, no problems, man. You know, it's part of life. You know, we lose the ones we love. So, but you know, after experiencing that and, you know, contemplating the possible existence of a life after death, you know, do we go on? I wanted to, you know, be involved with the paranormal, try and document a possible existence of life after death. And, try and provide that information to the public.
Okay. Yeah, that's, you know, actually, Mike, what's funny is your experience kind of is really similar to mine, except mine was an old woman, not an old man.
Okay.
But, it kind of struck me as being kind of funny that they were very much similar. So let's talk about the American Paranormal Research Association. You know, how do you guys approach an investigation? What is your methodology or techniques?
You know, we approach this field solely from a scientific principle. Mm-hmm. We've been lucky enough since the founding of APRA to put together a panel of various professionals from technical industries that are of assistance in helping us prove or disprove the data that we collect. But yeah, we approach everything from a scientific approach. We go in, we document, we analyze, and we draw our conclusions from that. But, you know, we'd like to keep it as simple as possible. We're not, you know, the team that's really techie that goes out there and uses every single gadget we can get our hands on. We like to keep it simple. We like to try and document anything, you know, tangible through video or audio. And we try and correlate our devices. We try and document the data. And hopefully it's something that we can have tested to help us understand it or possibly provide information that it is unexplainable or therefore paranormal.
Okay. Now, is it just you two guys, or do you also have, you know, other members that help out?
It's just myself and Michael. We, you know, one thing about our organization, the way we do conduct our investigations, you know, some people might not agree with it fully, but we go into these structures alone. We investigate in the building alone, not only for the reason of to keep down on contamination and to know that we're in as much of a controlled environment as possible. But also, I mean, if you look at this, like you mentioned earlier, as these are people that are still hanging out in these buildings, we're more approachable when it's just one of us. You know, it can be a lot easier to speak to just one of us than 5, 6 of us. And, you know, we go in alone, we document, and we try and provide explanations for what we do document.
Okay. All right, cool. So now let's go back to some of the other, you know, places that you guys have investigated. I myself and all of our listeners, you know, mine and Karen's listeners, you know, we're always interested in hearing about, you know, individual experiences. Now you talked about the McConaughey, right? I can't get my shirt off. let's talk about, you know, Have you guys ever had any experience that was like, wow, this is really, you know, I need to check my shorts after this?
Yeah, you know, most recently I can think of a little story from one of the investigations that you'll see in the second season of Haunted Discoveries. We were in Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. Mm-hmm. And it's a rare occasion, I think, as far as I'll speak for myself to say I think it's a rare occasion for me to have something that really catches me so off guard or is scary to the point where, I feel like that, you know, like check your shorts. You know, luckily, I don't think I've had that situation yet. I remember wondering to myself, you know, is there going to be a time where I'm going to run screaming like a girl? You wanted to know how you were going to handle that situation going into the paranormal field actively.
Sure.
Because, you know, there's always that potential. You never know how you're going to handle something until you do. But
right.
We were in Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, and we left one of our guest investigators who was helping us up on the third floor. And mm-hmm. Brandon and I retreated to the stairwell. We maintained a decent distance to each investigator when they were on their own, just for safety purposes, because this location has kind of a bad reputation. You know, with spirits and kind of some violent activity reported. So we wanted to make sure that was, you know, we kept that situation as safe as possible. And
sure.
as soon as the door closed to the stairwell where we were going to put up shop and wait, we just heard this terribly, terrible, like, yell of pain coming from the third floor, the door that had just closed. And, I mean, it was just so loud to us. And I just ran to the door and I flung it open and I yelled, you know, to our guest investigator, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" And you'll see this in the investigation episode. And it was terrifying for me, just because I thought he was hurt. I thought something bad had happened. He'd fallen through the floor, or something had fallen on top of him, or some kind of craziness.
Right.
And he didn't hear a thing. There's no recording of any noise like that anywhere. There was an EVP caught at the time that you'll hear in the episode. At the same time, we would have heard that noise, but it was nothing like what we heard. That was a pretty harrowing moment right there. That I had a lot of concern.
Now, you guys talk about the, you know, violent, you know, the, you know, allegedly violent apparitions or spirits or whatever that's at this location. You know, what are some of the things that people have experienced that would make them violent besides, you know, this one that you have already told me about?
Particularly on the third floor, which was one time used as a rehab and a mental facility on one portion of the wing. One of the reports that have been reported on multiple occasions is of someone being physically dragged by an unseen force into one of the rooms where they were beaten by an unseen force. And apparently one of these investigators documented that, and he actually had a handprint imprinted into his back, as well as multiple scratches on his body. But that's something that has been reported on multiple occasions, the people being scratched, hit, punched, slapped, stuff of that nature.
So you guys don't have any, like, you know, Zach Bagans moments where something is going to swallow your soul and drag you straight to hell?
No. No.
Not thus far, and I don't plan to.
Good. Cool. Yeah, that's kind of the problem when you're dealing with, you know, spirits that were, you know, in life, they were, you know, mentally ill, especially dangerously mentally ill. You know, it's been kind of my experience that just because you die doesn't mean that changes you. Has that been your guys' experience as well? I mean, if you're a bad person in life, you're going to be a bad person in death.
Definitely. That's one thing that our organization believes very much so, is what, you know, the kind of the Peter James philosophy, as in life, as in death. Definitely that's something we do.
Sure. Yeah. So what are some of the other, you know, places that, you know, we can, you know, give us like a quick thumbnail sketch of some of the investigations that you've done before we hit up the break here at 9?
Yeah.
Or
coming up
at top of the hour.
Coming up here on the first episode of season 2, we do provide the investigation we conducted of Silver City Ghost Town, located in Bodfish, California, which was awesome to be able to get in and actually investigate an old ghost town. And we were there, you know, for an 8-hour period, and mm-hmm. we did document some really odd data. Actually, one instance when I was in the old church alone, I had a pretty intense experience where I noticed one of our motion detectors was set off. At the mm-hmm. exact same time I saw that motion detector go off, the camera in my hand died. Little did I know, at the same time, IR2, which was on our other camera, died at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
After all these devices go off and die at the same time, which were obviously all on different power sources, we collected mm-hmm. one of the best class A EVPs we've collected in our research of a voice saying, "Stop looking at me."
That's outstanding. I'm kind of a an EVP junkie, so I'm like the EVP guy from my group, more or less. I guess they tell me I do a pretty good EVP. How often do you guys get more EVPs at investigations, or are you able to document activity by other means? You know, photographs, video, what?
You know, I would say EVP would probably be 80% of the data we collect, and myself and mm-hmm. Michael both love EVP because yeah. it's not only can be credible, you know, with the historical significance of a piece of data collected, but it can be tested. You know, with spectrum analyzer, you sure. can get in and break down every frequency of that recording. You can find out if it's a stray cell phone frequency, radio frequency, and you can really get in and test that data, and that's what makes it so credible to myself and Michael, is because it can be tested, you know, to an ultimate degree.
Yeah, and sure. I think another part of it that helps with it being, I would say, probably one of the more primary pieces of evidence is that it happens on a regular basis. I mean, it's you have that right. You have to be at the right place and at the right time. You have that holy grail moment, you know, as far as video data is concerned. But EVP seems fairly dependable. Most people can get EVP if they know what to listen for, if they keep the contamination down, and it's mm-hmm. a fairly, you know, universal way to collect good, you know, evidence. And that is a key point, is that, you know, that it's a rare occurrence for anybody, I think, for the most part, to get a piece of real hard video data or photographic data. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everybody can have go get an audio recorder and collect. Even if you don't do it, you know, professionally in a group, you can just do it for yourself. And sure. that's how you collaborate evidence with other groups. And you collect the same voice, you collect it saying the same name, or, you know, certain things that you can key together and sure. And try and, you know, get a collective idea of what's going on at a location.
All right, now let's talk about, you know, video and picture evidence. You know, you always get people who get the orb or orbs, you know, spirit spheres, as I like to call them, just as kind of a joke. But in your guys' opinion, you know, when you're looking at something like that, you see like the orb or, you know, it looks like a blurry light flashing through a picture or a video or whatever. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, my knowledge in video and what is unexplainable in video only goes so far, but luckily right. we have experts or people that have worked in that particular field for a long time that can give us an insight into, you know, what is an unexplainable image or what can be explained from natural causes. But every sure. time that I've either presented something like that to an expert or have seen someone else present data of that nature, it's usually a natural occurrence. Moisture, dust, bugs, stuff of that nature. But, you know, in my particular investigations and the way I conduct my investigations, that's not something I would take as credible evidence of being paranormal.
Okay. Yeah, I tend to feel the same way. It's, you know, it's just too easily confused with other natural elements, you know, as Brandon stated. You know, so as far as I'm concerned, the only time I can ever really say that I've spoken to somebody and say that I do believe in the concept of an orb, not necessarily mm-hmm. in photographic evidence, but I've seen light anomalies that I, you know, very fast that I couldn't distinguish what they were. I couldn't mm-hmm. find any kind of other, you know, natural occurrence, a car light coming through, you know, a crack in the window or something. You know, I couldn't figure out what was going on. But when you see it with your own eyes, that's a little bit different. You know, if you knew there were a couple people that saw the light anomaly and you took a picture of it, and then you were able to get a picture of it, that's a little bit different because you have the personal experience to back it up, as opposed to just snapping a figure and nobody can see anything, but you think you see a bunch of orbs in the picture. You know, that could easily be dust or a bug or any kind of other, you know, natural occurrence.
Right, right. You know, I hate to be on this subject, but it's kind of like just something that I like to talk about with people with the orbs. Now, when it comes to orbs, what about, you know, like it's emitting its own light? It looks like it's got a trail going, you know, that's following it. Have you guys experienced anything like that in photographs or video?
Definitely. And that, definitely. You know, when it emits its own light source and, you know, it has a trail, like you're saying, you know, like it, its own tail or whatever, you know, you want to call it. But yeah, I have seen stuff of that nature, and it definitely can be unexplainable. If it, like you're saying, if it does emit its own light source, I mean, what can you say? I mean, what goes around emitting its own light source? Bugs don't do that. Dust doesn't do that. I mean, dust is reflective to a certain degree, but it's not going to emit its own light source when you see this light reflecting on a solid surface such as a floor, you know, a wall or a table. I definitely couldn't give you an explanation for that.
I was just thinking, you know, as soon as you mentioned that the, you know, giving off its own light, I don't remember off the top of my head, Brandon, you might be able to help me out, but I remember seeing a documentary, and I forget where it was at, but it was there, you know, there was these little light anomalies right next to, like, the carpet, and you could actually see them giving off their own light, and there was actually a shadow cast on the wall and on the floor from these little glowing pieces of light.
Which just wasn't taken with IR either. This was a standard camera.
It was, and the investigation was back in, what, the 80s or something
I believe
like
this
that.
Was a Barry Conrad documentary.
Exactly, that's the Barry Conrad.
Yeah, that's the Barry Conrad thing, I know exactly what you're talking about.
That is something that definitely piques my interest as far as that's concerned. That's one of the few pieces of light anomaly or whatever you want to call it that it really does kind of make me think, you know, because if I remember correctly, I don't know that they actually saw those.
No,
I,
he did not. You know, the interesting thing about that is he had that tested, and they, you know, they couldn't come up with its own. You know, bugs don't have a flight path like that, like they spoke about in the documentary.
Well, and I think that they said that the area that they're in, there's no, they don't have any kind of you know, fireflies or any type of bug that could even do that, let alone you know, because it was emitting its own light source. So there was kind of they went through everything to try and debunk what it could be. And like I said, they, from what I remember, they never even saw it. So that's one of those things where that is a piece of evidence that apparently no one ever saw with their own eyes. That is very interesting to me.
Hey, guys, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the panel of experts that you guys use that goes over that, that go over your evidence. And also, too, from what I understand, you have a number of EVPs to play for us, correct?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So I'm just going to throw it over to the boss lady right now, and why don't you take us to break, Cheryl? You're listening to Paranormal Underground Radio.
Sorry, I jumped the gun.
That's okay.
Let's redo that, shall we?
Okay.
Hi, everybody. This is Lee Douglas. I want to invite all of you 50s and 60s music lovers to listen to Old Time Rock and Roll, the largest oldies podcast in the world today, with a 110,000 song playlist. Our shows are always available 24/7. Go to www.oldtimernr.com. We have two new shows each week, and we take requests and dedication just like the old days. That's oldtimernr.com. Come on over and join the fun.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.org.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Sorry. station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency.
On ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. This is your host, Rick, and I am here tonight with Brandon Alves and Michael Rudy of the American Paranormal Research Association. And we're talking about their investigations, their website, and their web-based television show on Coldcast TV called Haunted Discoveries. I'm sorry, which one? Was it you, Brandon, that I was talking to about being married?
Yes.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit about this off... off air, guys. You know, it's kind of like something. I think sometimes people forget that we have that we do have family members, and you know, my wife oftentimes says before I go on an investigation, "Love you, have fun, and don't bring anything home with you." You know, Brandon, how does your wife feel about you know you doing these investigations?
You know, she's very open to me conducting the investigations and is open-minded mm-hmm. when it comes to you know possible existence of life after death and ghosts and whatnot. But yeah, she does have some Native American blood in her, and so she's mm-hmm. very much so a believer in spirits and the spiritual world. And mm-hmm. Yeah, she's, you know, just like you mentioned, you know, she always lets me know to be safe and don't bring anything home, because there has been an instance where I have brought something home with me. So we have had, you know, some experiences with that.
Yeah, I think right. that kind of happens to everybody every now and again. I've had something follow me home as well, and so you just kind of, man, I got to deal with this. What am I going to do?
Yeah. Well, you know, you do kind of run the risk of something attaching itself to you or attaching to, you know, just a piece of your equipment. I've actually heard people talk about how a spirit would attach itself to their automobile, and the spirit would actually show up in their back seat while they were driving. So I always thought that was a really interesting story. That was something that needed to be cleansed. But okay, before we went to break, we were talking, I touched a little bit on this panel of experts that you guys use to go over your evidence. Can you tell me a little bit about them? Who are these experts, and what makes them experts?
Yeah, you know, like I said, we've been lucky enough to put together a panel, if you will, of various experts from technical industries. Mm-hmm. The first expert that I was lucky enough to consult was from one of the very first historical societies we worked with out of Santa Clarita. And he was a mechanical engineer for 35 years who's worked with multiple government agencies, including NASA at one point. And
you don't get any more expert than that.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I was lucky enough to meet him early on in my investigating, and mm-hmm. He did help me in understanding what a true scientific principle is and how to logically go in and try and document unexplainable events. And, sure. You know, since 2007, I have been consulting him, and he's mainly does a lot of our audio testing with Spectrum Analyzer, and mm-hmm. He's been a really great help in what we do. Also, we consult a medical doctor out of a college at Cal State Fullerton, who mm-hmm. does help us in understanding various pieces of video that we've captured and anything to do, you know, with a medical occurrence or stuff of that nature. But yeah, sure. mainly. Consult engineers of mechanical engineers that have worked in the field for a very long time.
Right. Yeah, you can't get any more expert than that. So, you know, speaking of EVPs, from what I understand, you guys have a few EVPs for us to listen to. 5, correct?
Yes.
Outstanding. Hey, Cheryl, do you have those ready for our listeners?
I do. The first one, and maybe Brandon and Michael can set us up, but not tell us right away what we're supposed to hear, but just the conditions and where it was located. The first file I have lined up is from, I believe, the first class pool in the Queen Mary.
Right.
So,
lay it on us, guys. What was the situation there?
We were lucky enough to get a chance to investigate the infamous first class pool in the RMS Queen Mary in Long Beach in the mm-hmm. winter of 2009. You know, a lot of people, I'm sure, are familiar with the famous talking ghost girl, Jackie, of the RMS Queen Mary First Class Pool. Again, we were there in 2009 in the winter. Myself and another investigator at the time were in the pool area alone for roughly 3 hours. And this was mm-hmm. around, it was from 12 a.m. to 3 a.m., roughly. And for hours, we were calling out to Jackie, trying to get some form of communication. And right about when we were about to wrap it up and leave the area, we called out again, and we received an answer.
Excellent.
That we did hear this audibly with our own ears.
So it's not an actual EVP. It's a more of a disembodied voice caught on tape.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Cheryl?
Okay. Here we go.
Okay, now I definitely hear something there. Of course, you know, I hear you two guys talking, but there's definitely a female voice there. Cheryl, can you play it for us again, please? Maybe we could try and make it out.
Yep.
Thank you. All right, guys. I mean, I hear something there, and I'm sure that our listeners hear something there. What do you think that this voice is saying? It sounds like screaming no and get out to me.
Exactly. That's exactly what we hear as well. You know, it's obviously these are open to interpretation. People hear different things, but that's exactly what I hear. I hear no the first time, get out the second time, and I hear at the very end, right after you hear me speak, you hear, help us, it seems to be saying.
Help us?
Yes, that's what I would believe it to be saying. I definitely hear the no, get out, and then help us.
And that's how my ears work as well. Sorry to interrupt you there. I tend to hear help us as well every time I hear that one.
All right, you know what? Let's try it once again now that we got the Hegelian dialect tape going. Can we hear that again, Cheryl?
Sure. Here we go.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Yeah. I think I definitely hear that. And you guys believe this to be the little girl, Jackie. Now, from what I understand, Jackie in the first class pool is maybe only 8 or 9 years old. This sounds like somebody much older than that.
Right. It definitely could be. You know, I don't necessarily believe that it's Jackie, but I do believe, you know, obviously it's a female voice, and there were no females with us at the time. But, you know, there also is the... what is believed to be the apparition of a woman in that area as well by the name of Sarah, who's supposed to be in her early 20s. So that very well could be her, you know. But, not necessarily we don't believe that it's Jackie. You know, we can't say that for sure, but everyone we show that to usually attributes it to Jackie because of the, you know, obviously the quote-unquote haunted history of the location.
Okay. Cheryl, let's go to the second one that we have, please. Can you guys, lay it on us what the situation was there? Oh, after Cheryl tells us what it is.
Okay, this file that I have lined up next is it's from the Newhall Ranch House. So do you want to tell us what that's about?
Yeah, this was collected at the Newhall Ranch House located in Santa Clarita, California, in a collection of historic buildings known as the Heritage Junction Park that is operated by the Santa Clarita Valley Historical Society. We did conduct multiple investigations there over a span of 4 years, and in this Newhall Ranch House, we did collect the voice of a man, but this was during a time when we were setting up pieces of equipment, control devices in the house, and this voice seemed to be speaking out over our investigators that were walking around the house.
All right, cool. Right on. Lay it on us. Yeah, definitely hear a man's voice there. Can't really make out what it's saying. What would you guys call that? A Class A, Class B, or Class C?
I have to call it the lower end of a Class B, if you will.
Okay.
But, you know, if you want to play it one more time, I'd definitely like to get some insight to the history surrounding the recording.
Definitely. It's definitely a pretty scary sounding voice. What do you guys think it's saying?
You know, originally I thought it was saying something different, but when I did show this piece of data to the Historical Society, they instantly thought it was saying Mary Ellen, yelling the name Mary Ellen. And the interesting thing about that is where the Heritage Junction Park sits now, obviously these collection of buildings were moved there from its previous site. And where it sits now was formerly the property of William S. Hart, which was the silent film cowboy actor.
Right.
And the very interesting thing about that is his sister, who was the only one that lived on the property with him, was named Mary Ellen.
Somebody in our chat room, Robin Marie, she's asking, who's the man screaming in the back?
Apparently someone that's unaccounted for.
Okay, all right, cool. Can we hear it again, Steve? Maybe we can hear Mary Ellen?
Yes, yeah.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Here we go.
Ooh. Okay, yeah. I definitely hear that right now.
Yeah, okay. In the screaming voice, or the louder voice that seems to be disembodied, that's the EVP, that's the unaccounted for voice. At the very end of the recording, you do hear one of our investigators begin to speak for a second. But that screaming voice, if you will, is the disembodied EVP.
Okay. All right, let's line up the third. We have five, correct?
We do.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Let's line up the third. Cheryl, what do we got? And then you guys can tell us, set us up.
Yeah, the next two we have are from the Villisca Axe Murder House. And the first one I'll just tell you what you're going to be listening for, but it's of a girl screaming. But you guys can tell us the setup on that.
Yeah, I'm sure all of your listeners or a lot of your listeners are familiar with the Villisca Axe Murder House, which is, America's greatest unsolved murder. The atrocities that took place in 1912 of the murder of the Moore family and two young girls who were friends of Catherine Moore, Lena and Ina Stillinger. I don't know if you've been there yourself, but the Villisca Axe Murder House, is a very small, farmhouse that realistically we couldn't investigate it without some form of contamination with multiple people in the house. So we set up control devices. We set up audio equipment, video equipment, to run in the house by itself for an extended period of time. And we did have a control device located just outside of the room Lena and Ina Stillinger were staying in the night of the murders. And we did collect the sound of what seems to be young girls screaming. Obviously, we've had people ask us in the past, are these dogs? Are these coyotes? Is it a siren? Obviously, these are all things that are natural causes that don't seem to be in this recording, because it has been tested with a spectrum analyzer and it is showing up in a frequency that is not technically supposed to be heard by the human ear and printed on the audio device.
Let's hear it then, please.
You can clearly hear what seems to be girl screaming.
Okay.
Sorry about that, guys. We had kind of a lag there for a sec. Cheryl, you got it set up?
Yep, here we go.
Cool. Okay, now I definitely hear something. I can't exactly say what. It doesn't sound like there's anything intelligent being said. It just sounds like a bunch of screams. Did you guys get any words out of that, or was it just the screaming?
No. It just appears to be what is screaming. Almost seems to be two girls, if you will, screaming together. Some people will say they hear voices out of it or hear tangible words, out of that, but I don't myself. I just hear loud-pitched screaming. And the interesting thing about that, historic-wise, is that the only struggle that was put up in that murder was believed to be Lena or Ines Dillinger, which were not in their beds as the rest of the family was found. So, you know, is that an imprint or is it a possible replay or residual of what happened that night? Who knows? Sure. We don't know, but it's definitely an interesting piece of audio.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the more, you know, saddest hauntings, you know, on record. Cheryl, can you play that again for us, please?
Sure.
Thank you. Now, I gotta be honest with you about something. At that time, I do kind of make out a word. And it's very faint, and it's at the very beginning, but it sounds like the word why.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. We've had people mention the exact same thing to us on previous occasions, so that's interesting you do say that.
Okay. Then you know, because there's a possible word there, Cheryl, how about just one more time with that one, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
Here we go.
All right, cool. You know what? All right, yeah, definitely. And one of our listeners, Robin Marie, Spiritual Medium, believes as well that not only is there a why, but there is a why me? Obviously, that's not Nancy Kerrigan screaming in the background, but you definitely can make that out.
Dev, you know, I do hear that, you know, now that you bring that up, and I did listen to it a couple more times, I do definitely hear something that, you know, that seems to be saying why, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask your professional opinion concerning the Axe Murder House, because it's definitely one of the most saddest, you know, reasons behind a haunting. Do you think that's mostly intelligent or mostly stone tape theory?
You know, I'd have to say from at least the investigation we conducted and the data we did collect, it does seem to be, you know, a residual type of haunting. We didn't collect anything, you know, intelligent, at least in our investigation. You know, didn't really receive any responses to our questions to any of the EVP sessions that we conducted. The only data we did collect was on, you know, the controlled situations where we had control devices running in the building by itself.
Okay. Hey, Cheryl, can we hear the fourth one? And after she lets us know, guys, if you could just set it up for us.
Yeah, also from the Villisca Axe Murder House, this one is labeled Children.
Yeah, again, this was collected with a control device, this time on the second floor in the bedroom of the Moore children, Boyd mm-hmm. Moore, Paul Moore, and the rest of the children. You know, a lot of people have documented a door opening and closing, a closet door in that room, as well as the voices of children on multiple occasions. And again, we did have a control device up there when we did collect the small voice of a young boy, or appears to be a young boy. It was so buried in the white noise, we really had to amplify it. So there's going to be a lot of noise behind it, but you definitely will hear the voice of a young boy.
Okay. All right, lay it on us. Who's that laughing?
We do not know. That's it. You know, I did not mention that in the intro to the EVP, excuse me, but you know, as me and Michael always refer to it as, it seems to be like that canned laughter from you know the old studio audience, you know, TV shows. What that laughter is, we do not know. This was recorded in a controlled environment. No one was in the house, and we did have people outside the house patrolling, making sure there was no contamination. Anytime we did hear something outside on the street, outside of the house, we made sure we did timestamp that. And what this was at this particular time, we do not know. But that laughter is one of the more creepier things I've heard in some time.
Definitely. Cheryl, can we hear it again, please?
Yeah. Here we go.
Thank you.
Yeah, very creepy laughter.
Yeah, wow. That's definitely some scary stuff. What do you guys think that it's saying?
You know, it seems to be three parts to this EVP. You hear at the very beginning, it seems to be saying a boy saying no, or ow. Some people believe it to be saying ow. Then you hear the laughter, and then we hear a voice of the young boy again. It seems to be saying, please don't. What are you doing to me?
Oh, okay. Well, let's hear it again then, Cheryl, because that's pretty creepy and sad. All right.
Okay, let's play that again. So, can I ask real quick?
Wow.
There were no investigators talking at any time during that audio that we just heard.
No, all the investigators were located in the barn. A few of them were actually outside, walking around the house, making sure there was no outside contamination. But no, there was no one in the house at that time.
Yeah, it seems that then you have a lot going on there in that clip. Wow.
You know something. I just want to get your guys' theories on it. Do you think that may be the killer or killers that could be laughing in that EVP?
You know, some people do believe that. You know, to be 100% honest with you, I have no idea. It doesn't sound like kids to me. The laughter, at least.
No.
You know, I do not know, but whatever is happening in that situation, especially from what we hear in the EVP, laughter is very much out of place.
Yeah. I mean, I know for me, I definitely hate doing any kind of investigation where there's spirit children involved because they're just, you know, they're the most confused and they don't really know what's going on. And they connect. I've actually been, you know, had some frightening experiences with some spirit children in the past. So it's, yeah, definitely always a sad thing. All right, let's hear the fifth and final one, Cheryl, if you will.
Okay.
And then you guys could set it up for us.
Yeah, this one, when I was listening earlier, it's to me very clear, probably the clearest out of all of them to me anyway. And this was captured at Wolf Manor.
Ooh, excellent.
Yeah, it was collected at the Wolf Manor, owned by Todd Wolf in Clovis, California. We've been very lucky to investigate the location on multiple occasions. And we did collect a lot of data in this location. I'm sure some of your listeners are familiar with the history. It originally was a sanitarium, turned into a convalescent home, and it now sits empty, going to be turned into a hotel in the future. But this was collected on the second floor. Again, a situation with a control device. We did have an investigator that just set down the control device and was walking away, which you will hear footsteps in that recording. But we did collect the voice of what seems to be a woman.
Okay. Did I hear "I love you"?
Close. We believe it to be saying "I'm gonna lock you up."
That's not even close, dude.
You have the L.
Cheryl, can we hear it again, please?
Okay. Yeah. Here we go.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, it could be love involved, especially if there's like a whole sadomasochistic thing going on there. But yeah, you know, I definitely hear that. I'm, you know, kind of wondering what people in the chat room think if they hear that as well. But yeah, it's definitely a woman's voice, and it's not saying something very nice. You know, the Clovis Wolf Manor was always one of those places that has interested me. Now, from what I understand, that it's been investigated many times, and I'm surprised Todd Wolf isn't, you know, making people pay to get in yet. But did you guys have any experiences with the spirit that is most experienced there called the man baby?
You know, I don't know if I was in contact or experienced the man baby, but there was an instance where myself and Michael did experience something that made us leave the location where we, you know, physically got up and left the building for some time.
So you guys did have a dude run experience there then, huh?
Yeah, you know, without the run.
We had a dude, let's get up and calmly stroll out of here and keep our composure because we're afraid of what's going to happen next. Moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was located in what is referred to as the heart attack room. And go ahead.
I was just going to say, just, you know, lay it on us. Let us know what happened there.
Yeah, you know, we were doing a live audio monitoring session where we were listening live during the short burst EVP session we were conducting, and myself and Michael both heard a response at the same time, yet we both heard something completely different. When we heard these voices, if you will, we both looked up at each other, immediately said, okay, let's get up and walk out. I myself heard a voice say, open the door, a very deep, raspy, disembodied voice say, open the door, and Michael will provide you with what he heard at the exact moment.
Yeah, it's at the exact same moment, just based on our reaction to each other. Dude, did you hear that? We were in the dark. If he could have seen my face, I mean, my jaw was literally on the floor. I heard in my recording, and we got it both on the recordings, what he heard is captured. Mm-hmm. What I heard was captured. I heard that same canned laughter you just heard from Villisca, Iowa. And it sounded almost identical. I mean, it wasn't quite as powerful as in Villisca, but that's the feeling that I got. Was I just was instantly like, I had that feeling we were surrounded by people, and then I heard that laughter, and my blood went cold, because I mean, having heard that Villisca EVP, it's one of the more unnerving sounds, as we discussed. Yeah. And to hear that in the middle of the Wolf Banner is that was pretty scary.
Yeah, back to Villisca, they never really caught the person that or the persons that killed that family, correct?
No, America's greatest unsolved murder. There obviously were suspects, but no one was ever officially taken in and charged with the crime.
I actually heard that there was upwards 36 people who were suspected and questioned and eventually let go.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay, sorry, guys, I had to think there for a second. Did you guys want us to let everybody know what your website is, any kind of books you guys are writing, let us know, when Haunted Discoveries is going to be on?
Yeah, definitely. You can find all the information about APRA and the organization at apraparanormal.com. That's APRAparanormal.com. You can see the show at coldcast.tv/show/haunted-discoveries, but you can get a link to the show directly off of haunteddiscoveries.com as well as apraparanormal.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. And we're always trying to provide as much information to the public as possible. And you can always find us on Facebook, Twitter, or the links I just provided.
Cool. Let me ask you something. Did Coldcast TV, were they the ones that approached you, or did you approach them with this idea?
We actually approached them with the idea. We've for some time now have been documenting our investigations with the means of video. Obviously, it's something that every paranormal investigator does, is try and capture video evidence or document their investigations through video. And we thought it would be a lot easier and a new way to get the information out to the public was through videos. And, since we've been documenting our investigations that way, it's provided a lot more data. It's made our investigations a lot more smoother. We start all of our devices at the same time, and we've been able to actually correlate multiple devices since we've been documenting our investigations this way, and providing it in the video format is just a really easy and user-friendly way to get the information in one place.
Cool, right on. All right, guys, why don't you give that website out again, and I think we're going to go to break.
Yeah, you can find it at hauntediscoveries.com. You can find the links there, as well as apraparanormal.com.
Okay. Awesome. All right, I'm going to throw it over to Cheryl now for break. You are listening to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com, and you've just been listening to Brandon Alvis and Michael Brandon Alvis and Michael Rudy from the American Paranormal Research Association. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheryl, you want to take us a break, please?
Hey, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
This is Paul Stanley from Kiss for Red, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Some of us work months producing a CD, but in less time than it takes to play it, someone will be killed in an alcohol-related crash. So please don't drive when you've been drinking. Plan ahead. Arrange a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
I know what you are. You drive too fast, you smell so good, and you dress fashionably well.
Say it out loud.
You're a metrosexual?
Oh, why do I always get that? I'm a radio show host.
Kale, I want to be one of them.
And you can be. Join me on ztalkradio.com, 9 p.m. Eastern on Sunday nights. The show's called Perspective.
Hey, do you sparkle?
Oh my God, don't even start. Hang on, Spider Monkey.
It starts with an itch and a tingle, and then it builds and expands. And suddenly, all at once, my legs won't let me stand. I scratch till my fingers go numb, but my skin never bleeds. A silent accomplice waits and feeds when I'm asleep. There's something that lives inside me. I promise I never.
starts with an itch and a tingle, and then it builds and expands. And suddenly all at once, my legs won't let me stand. I scratch till my fingers go numb, but my skin never bleeds. A silent accomplice waits and feeds when I'm asleep.
Are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com. A proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
Hi, everybody. This is Lee Douglas. I want to invite all of you 50s and 60s music lovers to listen to Old Time Rock and Roll, the largest oldies podcast in the world today, with a 110,000 song playlist. Our shows are always available 24/7. Go to www.oldtimernr.com. We have two new shows each week, and we take requests and dedication just like the old days. That's oldtimernr.com. Come on over. Enjoying the fun.
The competition has taken notice.
Oh my God!
Good luck keeping up with us.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. This is your host, Rick, and we just got done talking to the to Brandon Alvis and Michael Rudy from the American Paranormal Research Association. You know, unfortunately tonight we don't Karen with us, so we don't have any, you know, the normal lightning round questions that we usually have at the end of the show. But I did want to bring up something else. I wanted to bring Cheryl on, and we're going to talk about, you know, the new show on Sci-Fi last night. I don't know if anybody caught it. It was called Haunted Collector. It was about, you know, John Zaffis. For those of you who don't know who John Zaffis is, he's probably one of the greatest old school paranormal investigators that's still working today. Also, he's also the nephew of Ed and Lorraine Warren, and I can't think of two better people to train somebody in the paranormal field. So, yeah, Cheryl, are you there?
I'm here.
Cool. So, you know, I got to be honest with you about something. I know that I usually get down on the paranormal shows a lot, but you know, after watching this one last night, watching John Zaffis and you know, doing his thing, I really, really liked this show. What did you think about it?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. He's basically going out and investigating with a team, and I think two of his team, his children, I believe.
Yeah, his son and daughter. So sort of a family affair.
Yeah, family affair. You know, nephew to the Warrens. There was a lot of good things about the show, and overall, I was pretty impressed with it.
Yeah. I'd have to say the two things that I really liked about the show was his one investigator. Now, she admitted, he admitted that she was a sensitive. Now, a lot of people don't understand that a sensitive is not the same as being a psychic or a spiritual medium. A psychic tells the future, spiritual medium talks and sees spirits. You know, whereas a sensitive is a little bit different because all you're pretty much doing is sensing certain changes in the physical atmosphere. I always liken it to, you know, it's an evolutionary throwback when we were hunting mammoths and we were like, holy crap, there's a saber-toothed tiger behind us, and you could feel it, you know, coming at you in the dark.
Right.
So I think that it's, you know, that's what being sensitive. So, I mean, that's something you really don't see on a lot of television shows these days. The second thing that I really liked about the show was that they did say that, you know, spiritual activity happens 24/7. So, you know, we're going to, and they were actually doing their investigation during the day, which I thought was great because I know from my personal experience, I've actually gotten a lot more during the day than I've ever gotten at night. What did you think about that exactly?
Yeah, well, I mean, let's face it, I think a lot of the shows on TV now investigate in the dark for the dramatic effect, and I agree that the investigation should probably take place when the reported activity is occurring. And so, sure. You know, if that's at noon, then, you know, maybe investigate at noon, maybe yeah. investigate both during the day and at night, but definitely when the activity happens. And it's nice to see that taking place because on most shows now that just doesn't happen. So.
I don't know. I mean, I know that it, you know, a lot of it's because you can't really get like the IR to work properly yeah. or the laser right. grid to work properly during the day. But in my personal opinion, and I think that IR cameras make you look fat. Make people look fat. So
yeah, we don't need anything making us look fatter than we already are. So
yeah. But yeah, I thought that was really important that they laid that out there that spirit activity does happen 24/7, you know, and the missus and I were talking about it last night when we were watching the show, and my theory is concerning that if spirits can in fact use human energy to mm-hmm. be able to manifest. Wouldn't it make sense when we're up and about and moving around more and the energy is more kinetic rather than just,
definitely
sleeping in the middle of the night?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with the fact that paranormal activity goes on 24/7. I've seen it myself at all times of the day, all times of the night. I think it does make sense, though, for something to manifest that, maybe when we're active, but then again, I know people who have, woken up from a deep sleep or what have you to see, manifestation. So I'm not so sure about that, but I think it's definitely an interesting theory.
Another thing that I thought was really great about the show was the third thing was the idea of spirits attaching themselves to objects. Now, for people who don't know about John Zaffis in his home in Connecticut, in his basement, actually, he has over 1,000 pieces of artifacts that he's collected from people's homes over his 40 years of researching and investigating the paranormal, where these objects claim that they have some kind of spirit attached to them.
Right.
I personally don't think I would want to bring something like that in my home, but, unless he has the place, laying sea salt down around it or whatever. Who knows, kosher salt, that seems to work.
Right.
But, I think that's, I've actually had that happen once or twice on an investigation where somebody is like, I never had anything happen in my home. And then, we went and we bought this thing at the antique store. And now, we got stuff flying around the home. We got full bodied apparitions. So I think that those were the three things that I really enjoyed about that show that I thought really, another thing too. Sorry about that. But was the what was the uses of old school tactics in investigating the paranormal by hanging strings from the ground from the ceiling down? Of course, it being that if anything were walked through there and you can't explain it away through a breeze, then it could have been something paranormal. And I definitely think that's great. We've become so jaded by our technology that we've kind of forgotten what it means to be mm-hmm. human, and that this is a very human experience. And these old school methods or techniques, I mean, I will lay baby powder out on the ground to look for any unexplained footsteps in a room, or strings from a roof, or mm-hmm. double-sided sticky tape on something to see if there's like a phantom fingerprint or handprint or whatever. But I think that those were definitely the really good points, and I'm hoping that this is a television show that Sci-Fi will not just put on once or twice and be like, well, this doesn't add up to everything else that we have on concerning the paranormal, so we're just going to get rid of it. I think it's about time. I think it's damn time that somebody like John Zaffis, who is one of the one of the very few people in the field who I can say can legitimately call themselves an expert in the field.
Yeah, I agree. I hope. I don't know what the what the viewership was of this first show, but I definitely hope that it sticks around at least for a while to see, you know, what type of audience it can get, because it isn't just your standard formula show that you'll see these days. It is a bit different, so that would be nice to kind of see it stick around a bit longer.
But the
museum that he has is just it's amazing, like you said, amazing. And
it's definitely on my paranormal bucket list. Of things to see.
The aspect of a spirit attaching itself to an item is really an interesting thing. And we had an article in the magazine a while back about a spirit that had attached itself to a haunted toy.
And Robert the doll, right?
We didn't cover it, that particular item, but what the story also did hit on was the Raggedy Ann doll in that infamous case, and I can't remember the name of it, of course, right now, but I believe it was the one that the Warrens had helped to investigate. In fact, I think they actually maybe removed that doll from where it was, or they, I know there's that infamous shot with, I think Lorraine Warren holding the doll, but it's just, you know, it's kind of creepy, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to have toys be, I don't know if they're possessed by spirits or just attached to them, but definitely interesting.
Well, you know, I would while we were at break, I was talking about, you know, the investigation that my group has, you know, coming up this weekend. We're going to be, you know, investigating one of the oldest homes in Northern Illinois, and actually, it's part of a historical society in Lake County, up here in Lake County, Illinois, and it's also a museum. So there could be anything that has attached itself to any number of the items or artifacts that's in this. That's in this building. So, you know, time will see, and you know, we'll find out whether or not there's something really there. So I'm hoping it's not a Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to let us know. I know you can't give details because it's confidential, some vague findings that you might have uncovered.
I know, and I want to say this, you know, sorry to that, to our readers, because I know that, you know, sometimes in the investigations that we do, I, you know, will show up in the magazine or on the website, and all I can say is that it's legitimate, they're true, I'm not going to lie to you guys or anything like that, but, you know, I'm sorry that I can't share evidence. If I did, Tony Olszewski, our founder and fearless leader, would probably kick my ass out of the group.
That's understandable. Yeah.
So, you know, sure, let's, you know, wrap up the show tonight. Tell us what we got coming up in May's issue of Paranormal Underground magazine.
Yeah, we are trying to get ourselves back on schedule with the publication of the magazine. The next issue, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, is going to go online tomorrow or the next day. So check out paranormalunderground.net. It's free to read. All you have to do is just register on the site for free and click into the forum, and there you go. You can read it online. And for those who like to have a copy in their hands, you can also purchase it and have it mailed to you through our print-on-demand vendor, magcloud.com. Search for Paranormal Underground and it'll pop right up. But the next issue will feature Dr. Kieran O'Keefe and a bunch
now
of
that,
just
now that
really
is one
cool
that I can't
stories.
Wait to read, because I always thought that guy was pretty. I always thought that cat was pretty cool. So
well, I can tell you because I have read it. It's a really great interview. And Rob Demarest, formerly with Ghost Hunters International, wrote the Q&A and did the Q&A with Dr. O'Keefe, and it's a very good Q&A. And I, you know, give me your feedback after you read it, because I thought it was a really good Q&A.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know what? I would really like it if we could get Rob Demarest on the show sometime, because you know, he seems to be like a dude who really knows what he's talking about, and I'd really like to pick his brain a little bit.
Yeah, hopefully he will. He's got an open invitation. I know he's busy, quite busy right now, but yeah, hopefully in the future.
Okay. So what else we got going on for May?
We have next week's Paranormal Underground Radio. That would be what, the 9th, June 9th. We have on the TGAF guys back. We have Jeff
the great
and Barry.
American phenomenon, huh?
Yeah. Jeff and Barry. And the first time we talked to them, was pretty darn interesting. And, I really want to know what they've been doing since then. And, I know they have a lot of things going on. So I'm curious to find out what's been up with them.
Right. So. Well, what else we got going on in the magazine besides Dr. O'Keefe?
Oh, gosh. We have lots going on. Okay. We have actually one of the articles that was really compelling was about automatic writing. And compelling, I mean, from a personal experience standpoint, because the writer, Robinson Fair, had tried automatic writing, and just from the perspective of just learning how to do it and then trying it out. And so he's actually journaled his experiences with automatic writing, and it's pretty interesting. So
I've only actually seen automatic writing once in my entire time with researching the paranormal, and it was actually just fairly recent that I saw it. And I have no way of explaining that. It's amazing how fast the person's hand moves.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does look like, you know, somebody else is in control of you, of you physically. So,
well, what was interesting with this experience with Robinson was that while he was trying to learn how to do automatic writing, he came across another phenomenon regarding communication, as in oh gosh, I don't even know the term, but basically getting verbal communication while he was trying to attempt the automatic writing. So it was just, it led to something he never even expected, basically.
Okay.
So it was pretty interesting. I think everyone should check that out because it gives a good perspective from someone's personal experience on something that isn't talked about a lot in the field that I've come across. So they should
definitely
check that out. We also have, a lot of things. We had Larry Phelps, excuse me.
He's I thought you were going to say Larry Flint. I'm like,
Larry, no.
I'm glad we got him in here.
Yeah. All right. Larry Phelps, who's a longtime Gettysburg investigator and tour guide. He was on the show a while back, and we have his story coming up.
That was one of our best shows, in my opinion.
It was awesome. Yeah, I mean, he basically shed a lot of light on what happens there at Gettysburg, and so the article actually more explores an interesting experience that he had, and so that's going to be in our haunted history section. We have Lake Erie Lights in We Are Alone, so that is that is going to be in the next issue, and we also have, of course, your article on the House of 100 Spirits.
Excellent.
Plus, we have articles on cryptids and more personal experiences. Rob St. Helens' ongoing column on Tales from the Haunted Heathman Hotel is going to continue, and that's where he works. So he shares some interesting things there. And everyone check it out. And basically, what we're just trying to do with each issue is to not only share personal experiences, but just start discussion on the paranormal and just continue, what discoveries are made ongoing. And in that way, maybe we can help in our small way advance the field. So that's our mission.
And that is probably the best mission you could possibly think of. You know, everybody's always so down on personal experiences.
Oh gosh!
As an old school investigator, I may not see it as evidence and other old schoolers like me, but it's definitely a place where you can start.
For me personally, I think it's not only a place to start, but it's one of the most important aspects of the paranormal. It's the personal experience, and we're not going to be able to explain it just through looking at the personal experience. But I think that without that, you have nothing. Those columns in the magazine are my favorites because you're hearing experiences that are oftentimes not only mind blowing, but like I said, open up that discussion, and maybe you can hit on something that you hadn't thought of before.
Yeah. So. Well, you get the whole science aspect of it, and the whole science aspect of it is fine, but when it all really boils down to it, we didn't have EMF detectors and video cameras 130 years ago when the Society for Psychic Research in England was first founded, and of course 50 years before that, London's Ghost Club. They didn't have all that. And even the world's greatest ghost hunter, Elliot O'Donnell, you know, he didn't enter into, the only thing he ever entered into a house was with a pen and a pad of paper,
mm-hmm.
and wrote down whatever it is that he experienced. And, you know, it wasn't until Harry Price,
mm-hmm.
and he was a fun one who finally started doing all the scientific approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, all right, guys, well, you know, I just wanted to say thank you for listening to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Rick Hale, and have a good week, and we'll see you next week with the guys from the Great American Phenomenon on. Have a good night.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. See you next week.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z Talk Radio Network.